How is everybody today? Excellent. Lots of murmurs of assent. That's good. It's good to be together. Amen. If you're a first-time visitor, we're glad to have you with us. If you've been here a lot, we're glad you're back. It's great to be together, to worship together. I'm going to invite Roy to go ahead and come on up. I don't really need to invite. Come on up. He and I are actually going to tag team today's sermon. So if you're thinking like a wrestling match, let's hope not.
Just invading space here.
That's right. It shouldn't be quite so violent, I think.
I feel like I'm trespassing up here, actually.
Is that the appearance I give off? That's the real question. No, I hope not. Our hope as we've kind of closing out this series, and the slide was actually probably very helpful in the fact that you guys are probably tired of hearing Matthew 9, 35 through 38, and that's totally okay. You're going to hear it again anyway. But we did want to move on with what Jesus' point was, which is what today's sermon is all about. And so I'm thankful to have Roy and his experience and advice to walk alongside of this as well. So we're going to be in Matthew 10 and kind of working through some of the things that are there. Be careful what you pray for. Now, my mom would be very happy to tell you that based on her experience these past few years. My parents have a heart for missions. They always hosted missionaries in our home. They housed people that were training to be missionaries. My dad was the missions deacon for our church. We heard countless presentations, watched numerous slideshows, listened to stories of what God was doing in far-flung places around the world. They encouraged me to go on short-term mission trips with my youth group and later while I was in college. And then they were slightly distressed when I told them, leaving college, I wanted to do ministry, and I thought I'd go overseas for a while as a missionary. And so my mom had two responses. I guess it was our fault, which is, yeah, true. And be careful what you pray for. Now, they mean it with all the love in their hearts, and they're slightly joking, and they would tell you that. But it is true. Be careful what you pray for and what you model for those around you, because people are watching, and it often changes who they are. My mom called that moment her Hannah moment, the moment in which she realized she was going to have to pray and give her children over to God and trust that God was going to lead them and that he would take care of them.
So I was talking to this kid, and he was about to go to ACU, to Abilene Christian University, and he was going to study English. And you may not know this about me, but my undergraduate degree is in English. And so I was, you know, really excited about that. And so we were talking about the community at ACU, what he could expect from college. And he asked me, okay, so how is it that you studied English, but now you are a minister? Well, I love it when people ask me those kinds of questions. And so I was explaining to him, well, I did this, and then I felt God, he was opening this door for me, and step after step after step, and finally I ended here. And as I was telling him the story of my life, I could see the wheels start to spin in his mind, because I know he loves English, but he also really loves God. And I could see him sort of wondering, like, how is God going to invite me into the kingdom? What is it going to look like for me to be a Christian in this world? And I could see him thinking those things, and I knew that I was probably looking at somebody who was going to be a minister. In some way, he was going to be ministering or serving God in some really cool ways. And so he goes away, but then his mom comes up to me, and she says, Roy, could you please not encourage my son? I do not want him to be a minister. So just don't talk about that, if you don't mind. Of course, I'm thinking like, oh, wait, what? I'm a minister. And we got to talking, and where she's coming from is a place she really understands what ministry is like. She's from a ministry family. And so she has seen men and women serving and working in some really broken and unhealthy congregations. And so she has seen the price that some of the people God has called into ministry have had to pay, and she didn't want that for her son. Now, she did use the phrase, I want him to get a real job, It stung a little bit. But I looked at her and I said, I hear what you're saying. I do. But look, you taught him and you cultivated in him this love for Jesus that is really apparent. And he really loves people and is good with people. And that just may be the Holy Spirit giving him that gift. And so if he raises his hands and says, God, what do you want from my life? And God sends him to Honduras to work with kids, or he sticks him behind a pulpit of a church, that's really up to God. And it's kind of on you. Because you're the one who showed him what it's like to follow Jesus and to ask God, what do you want from my life? Your will be done.
Andrew Murray was a young South African man who decided he wanted to be a minister. He'd been raised in a Christian family, and he thought of it more of a career choice. So he went to seminary, but the more and more he studied and he grew and he learned, he discovered he really felt called to ministry and to missions. And so he wrote back to his parents with these words, "Your son has been born again. I have cast myself on Christ." And for the rest of his life, Murray would pray this prayer, "May not a single moment of my life be spent outside the light, love, and joy of God's presence, and not a moment without the entire surrender of myself as a vessel for him to fill full of his Spirit and his love." And I love that fact because it models for us the idea that when God takes hold of someone's life, it has a profound effect on who they become. Jesus changes everything. I have absolutely no idea how the disciples felt when Jesus showed up on the scene at whatever thing they were doing, and he always made a very similar statement, "Come and follow me." And for some reason, they did. And he invited them into a journey in which he asked them to watch and then participate in his ministry as he begins to reach out to the people around him. And their lives are forever changed. And as we've studied for these past few weeks, that ministry, that mission of Jesus is to bring healing and restoration and redemption to our world. And during Jesus' Galilean ministry, Matthew tells us that Jesus is looking around with compassion, and he notices that the people are harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. And so he calls them to prayer. The disciples are told, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. So therefore ask the Lord of the harvest to send out workers into his harvest field." Now, we have no idea how much time passes between chapter 9, verse 38, and chapter 10, verse 1. But for Matthew, the connection is instantaneous. It's immediate. Their prayer is followed immediately by their sending. So be careful what you pray for. Jesus called his 12 disciples to him and gave them authority to drive out impure spirits and heal every disease and sickness. And then he tells them, "Do not go among the Gentiles or any town of the Samaritans, but go rather to the lost sheep of Israel. Start at home. As you go, proclaim this message, 'The kingdom of heaven has come near.' Heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse those who have leprosy, drive out demons. Freely you have received, freely give." Jesus calls them to preach and proclaim. Indeed, the very status of the 12 changes here. Before this, they were called disciples or students. But now with this calling, this commissioning, their name changes to apostles, which comes from a Greek word which means the sent ones. They are people who have been sent on mission for God. And they're given two tasks. Proclaim the gospel through your preaching. Tell them the kingdom of heaven has come near. And the message here is key because with the arrival of Jesus, then everything has changed. Things are being righted and restored. Hope and help has come. But he also calls them to proclaim the gospel through their actions. They're told to do the very things that Jesus himself has been doing. Healing, restoring, cleansing, driving out demons. Their ministry would be modeled on the ministry of Jesus. The disciples are being sent out for a mission. They've been commissioned and called to ministry. So Roy, would you tell us, how is it that you felt you knew you were being called to a life of ministry?
Yeah, well, I was lying in bed one night, and I was asleep and I heard somebody say, "Roy." So I stood up and I looked around and there was nobody there. So I thought I imagined it, went back to sleep. "Roy!" Just up again. Finally, you know, I looked, I didn't see anybody. I knew that it wasn't my imagination. So I said, "Here I am."
All right, I feel like I've heard this story before somewhere. Okay, so you're telling me that your story is very much like Samuel, that you heard a voice while you were sleeping.
Yeah, did you not?
Not a bit, no.
That would have been cool though. That would have been a lot of fun. That clarity, you know, you just know. Now, you know, this whole idea of being sent. All right, this is an interesting concept. Because here's what I think that we think happens. I think that we imagine that there are these special people that God sends out into the world. But here's the thing, we are all called, right? We are all called by Jesus. That calling, you know, you mentioned this, Levi is sitting at his tax collector's booth and Jesus just walks by and he says, "Hey, come, follow me." And he gets up and he goes. Well, we all hear that calling. And when we become Christians, we're doing the same thing. We're getting up and we are entering into this life of learning how to follow Jesus. And it really is like this learning process. As disciples, we have to learn how to trust Jesus and how to surrender our plans and our egos and our dreams of honor and prestige. We have to say to him, "Okay, show me what you want my life to look like." Now, I think we have this assumption that there are some people who really have that in the bag. Like we're all struggling, we're all learning how to follow Jesus, but there are these people, they're like expert disciples, right? And so Jesus takes them. You know, "You guys have nailed the whole following thing, so I'm going to send you guys out. You guys are going to be the missionaries and the ministers. You're going to be the writers and the counselors. You're going to be these special people who I am sending." And I do think that there's some truth to this, that those who are sent do have some experience being followers. We have seen, probably all of us, some people purporting to be Christian leaders who aren't actually following Jesus, right? So there's a connection there. There is. But look how Jesus sends his disciples. First, he gives them this power to do these incredible things. They can heal the sick. They can cast out demons. And he sends them, but Jesus then says, "Freely you have received, freely give. Take no gold or silver or copper in your belts. Don't take an extra bag for your journey. Don't take two tunics or a sandal or staff, for the laborers deserve their wages." So you're going to go, but you're going to leave your backpack at home. You're not going to take your cell phone. Now, when I don't have my cell phone, like I feel like I'm walking around just, you know, almost naked, like I've lost an appendage or something. Okay? Leave your wallet, leave your purse, leave your money. But it's that exact feeling of vulnerability that Jesus is sending the disciples with. I had a friend in Germany and we were doing Friendspeak together. Friendspeak is a term that you'll hear around here. We do this program here in this church. And when you're a Friendspeak volunteer, you have a workbook and you have a guide. And here's what it is. It's a ministry where we invite people who are non-native English speakers to come and to practice their English. And the story that we use to help them practice their English is the story of the Bible. And so this ministry program will help us have conversations with people about life and about faith and even about the story of Jesus that we're reading. And so we were doing this in Germany and we had come to this text in Luke chapter 4. And if you'll remember in Luke 4, Jesus gets up in a synagogue and he reads this scripture from the book of Isaiah. And among other things that he says, he reads, quote, "He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoner and to restore sight to the blind." And my friend asked me, okay, I don't really understand that. Could you explain what that means? And he's not a native English speaker, so I think that he's talking about this. There's a problem with the language. But he's not. It takes me a minute to figure this out. What he's asking for is for me not to explain what the words mean. He wants to know, how is it that Jesus gives freedom to the oppressed and to restore sight to the blind? That is a question that wasn't in my workbook. I flipped through it. I tried. I could tell that what he wanted to know was not something that I had prepared or that was prepared for me. The ministry program I was relying on wasn't going to cut it. So I closed it, and I looked at him, and I fumbled around with some things, and then finally I said, look, I've been blind. I mean, not literally, but there have been times in my life where I could not see the grace of God. Let's talk about that. And we did, and that was probably the best conversation that we had ever had. Jesus sends his disciples, and they don't have a ministry program. They don't have these invitations to a community event. All they have is the message of the kingdom of God and the power to demonstrate that, the authority of Jesus.
And what I find amazing here is he's asking them to trust. But he goes out on Jesus's authority, and he's asking them to trust in God and then trust that God is going to use other people, which is an incredibly radical concept. Learning to rely on other people because we believe that God is a good God. And to be honest, this is something that I struggle with. I'm a rather untrusting person. That's not what you want to hear from your minister from the front, I think. But when I talk to people, I'm not always accepting what I hear at the beginning. And I like to be in control because I don't trust. I like to be in control of my own life, my own situations, my own money, my future. But what's being asked of these disciples is the very thing that I struggle with. They're being asked to surrender their control, to trust that God is going to sustain them and take care of them and their ministry. The disciples are being asked to trust God, and God is asking the same for us.
You have trust issues?
I'm going to say that out loud.
Yeah, so the disciples are learning how to trust. I love how Bonhoeffer describes this. Okay, so the disciples are obeying this call from Jesus. And what happens is, like, they're having to move from this place of security. It feels secure when we are in control. Right? When we are the masters of our domain. But what's being asked when Jesus tells them, hey, come follow me, is that they have to move from this place of security to a place of relative insecurity, right? You're surrendering your control and you're kind of just trusting that God knows what he's doing. And so you got to move from security to insecurity. Except Bonhoeffer says that we have that all backwards. Because this space where we think that we're in control, this place of security, well, there's no actual security. There is there. Security is an illusion. It's a delusion. And really, isn't obedience to God the only place of real absolute security? It feels insecure, but it's actually the safest place that we could possibly be. And so Jesus is sending them, and they don't have all of these things that make us feel secure. But all they have is the words that they're sent to proclaim. And I'm sure they feel this like really strange anxiety. Like, I don't have my cell phone with me. I don't have my wallet, but I can heal people. And so I know, like, I have this power, but I still feel like there's some things missing. And it's that, and part of this is God's grace, because what they're having to do is learn how to trust in that. I feel like when we think that God calls us, he calls the super disciples and he sends them, that's not true. He just calls all of us and he sends all of us so that as we're out there in the field, we're also learning how to be disciples. That's the only way that I can explain how Tiffany and I ever ended up in Germany. Jesus had sent us into the harvest, and it was there, and it was really only there, that we first started learning what it really meant to trust in Jesus and to follow him.
And when we put our trust in God, and when our trust in God outweighs our fear of what the future might hold, I think that's when we arrive at peace. And that peace that we get then allows us to extend peace to others. When we learn to trust in God and trust in other people, then we become a person of peace. And we're being told then to extend that peace to other people. The word here for peace in Greek is very integrally tied to the Hebrew word shalom. Shalom is a word that's translated as peace, but typically takes on other ideas as well. Ideas of wholeness and healing and peace and prosperity. It's a reminder of the way things ought to be. Jesus tells his disciples to extend shalom, peace, wholeness through their actions. Bring healing, raise the dead, cleanse lepers, drive out demons. And then he tells them, whatever town or village you enter, in verse 11, search there for some worthy person and stay at their house until you leave. And as you enter the home, give it your greeting. And if it's deserving, let your peace rest on it. Bring peace to the people that you meet. Be a person that brings peace, true peace, lasting peace, wholeness.
You know, we talk about peace, and I can't help but think of how desperate this world is for peace right now. So let's talk about politics for a minute, right? Some of us in here think that the solution to these mass shootings in America is for more people to have guns. And some people in here think that the solution to these mass shootings is for more gun regulation. Now, okay, but either way, we're looking for peace through a sword, either our sword or the government's sword. And those seem to be the only options that we can come up with. Maybe the reason for that, and maybe the reason that the conversation stays at that level, it's because when it comes down to it, things like kindness and empathy and human connection, those are a lot more difficult than talking about public policy. Chris Harper Mercer, the organ shooter, he was an angry guy, and he was lonely, and he was isolated. The newspapers described him as somebody who was really angry that he never had a girlfriend. Now, that toxicity, that loneliness, that hatred, that manifested itself into something really horrible. Would the world have been different? Would Chris have been different if there were some people reaching into his life with an offer of kindness? People who were like genuinely interested in him. People who loved him just because they knew that God loved him. I don't know. Maybe it wouldn't have made a difference. But it strikes me that those who destroy shalom, those who bring chaos into suffering in the lives of other people, are often the people who need shalom the most, who are most desperate for peace.
And what our world needs more than anything else is a sense of peace and people who bring it. People who bring peace and hope and joy and life. People who follow the pattern of Christ. Although Jesus is speaking this message to his disciples, it is not just for the disciples, for we are all called into this ministry. Matthew's Great Commission is for every follower of Jesus, not just for a select few. And too often, as Roy said, we have this idea that certain people are called to live in the mission of God and other people are not. But the fact of the matter is, if we're followers of Jesus, then we are all called to participate in God's mission. We all have a part to play. It isn't just part of being a Christian. It's the essence of being a Christian. We mentioned earlier about Andrew Murray, and here's what he wrote in his small little book, With Christ in the School of Prayer. The Lord has surrendered His work to His church. He has made Himself dependent on them as His body, through whom His work must be done. And every believer is a laborer. As God's children, we have been redeemed for service and have our work waiting. It must be our prayer that the Lord would fill all of His people with the spirit of devotion, so that no one may be found idle in the vineyard. Each of us is sent somehow in some way. The work is for each one of us. We're all called to preach and proclaim, whether through words or actions. And it requires us to trust in God and trust in others, to make ourselves vulnerable for our sake and for theirs. And each of us is called to extend peace. That might mean we're called to foreign lands. It might mean we're called to just step down the street. It's in our neighborhoods, among our friends and our family. It's in our local establishments. So, Roy, what would it look like for you to extend peace?
Peace looks like chicken enchilada casserole.
That sounds good.
Dustin and Lauren Matthews make an incredible chicken enchilada casserole. And I know this because there was a time of chaos right after Miriam was born. And in the midst of that chaos, they came and they brought chicken enchilada casserole, and it was good. In fact, we had a lot of casseroles that week because this is a church that knows how to bring peace into the homes of people that need it. I got fat that week, like 5 pounds, I'm serious. Thank you. The ways that the peace of Jesus manifests itself is determined a lot by the shape of the chaos. So for the blind people, it was sight. And the disciples are given this power to restore sight to the blind. And it was through that healing that people knew that Jesus was bringing peace. In the book of Acts, chaos looks like hunger and famine and poverty. And so peace looks like people selling their land to make sure everyone has food in their stomachs and clothes on their backs. And chaos does look like new babies, and so we cook and deliver food for families who are having babies. I know that there are a lot of folks in here who are very tired. The work that they need to do to stay afloat is really too much for them. So peace looks like to them somebody, what, coming over, bringing a meal to them, taking the kids out so that they can get some work done. Chaos can be loneliness. And so peace may look like a phone call or an invitation to coffee or visiting someone in a nursing home. But then ultimately, what are we talking about when we talk about chaos? We're talking about sin. And we're talking about alienation from God. And we're talking about the shame and anxiety that sin brings on us. We're talking about death. And so what peace ultimately looks like is it looks like Jesus reaching his hand out and saying, "Follow me." And so when we tell the story of Jesus, the story that we find here in the text, but also the story of Jesus in our own lives, we are speaking his peace. The proclamation that God's kingdom is at hand and that it is for each and every one of us. That's peace to a world that is desperate for peace.
And so Jesus tells them, proclaim. He tells them to trust. And he tells them to bring peace, promote peace. He says, the harvest is plentiful. And how many of us actually believe it? How many of us are willing to trust God that the harvest really is plentiful and to step out and let God work? How many of us look at the world and think, there are a lot of people out here just waiting to hear about Jesus? but it's what we're called to do, because it is so true that we have a world that's waiting to hear about what God is up to.
So Jesus has pulled a fast one on his disciples, right? He has shown them the sheep of Israel, and he has said, look, you can see the harvest is ready, and all we need are workers, right? So I need you guys to pray that God sends the workers. And then they pray, and God sends them. I mean, he sends them. He sends the disciples who are sitting there praying. And it's one of the most perplexing and amazing things that God does is that he sends people like you and like me to do the work and to bring the kingdom, to bring peace, to bring the gospel of Jesus. Good news and peace. These are two things that we all need in this world. And if there is any way that we can help you, if there is any way that we can help you have the peace of Jesus Christ in your life, then come and let us know. We are walking as a community together. And so if we can walk alongside you, we want to know. Come, let us stand and worship the Lord of the harvest together.
And glad for the sinful.